Welcome back to the Ojogo Bonito podcast, hosted by me, Jake Ron. We have Mr. Ferguson.
Hello, hello, hello.
Football, football, football. Ojogo Bonito, as they like to call it.
Never get away from it.
Wow. We do have a special episode coming out in... It's in the works.
Yeah, it's on Valentine's Day it's coming out, actually. This has been a slightly confused recording schedule of a week.
Yeah.
So we're recording this one today on the day it comes out, Friday, which is Friday the 10th. And we've actually recorded the next episode before this one. We recorded that on Wednesday. Yeah, you'll hear on the Valentine's Day episode, which, spoilers, is about the return of European football, that we get very confused about what day it is, what we're talking about, when it's happening. So look forward to that, I guess.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to league football being consistently back. It's been back for a while. And I think there's a mid-season break coming up soon, if I'm not mistaken. Oh no, has that already happened? I'm not sure.
I'm not certain about all the leagues, but I'm pretty certain that the mid-season break's was scheduled for the World Cup.
Yeah, that's probably the best shout.
They've disrupted enough already. You know, Miles Bronn and his army of disruptors, for any of you who've watched Glass Onion recently.
The Premier League's been a bit... obviously, Man United drew against Leeds.
Yes, Man United did indeed draw against Leeds, and
I do think
that was a match that happened.
that was a great game, actually.
It was. No, in fairness, it was a great game to watch. It wasn't on telly. But for those of you who did watch it, it was a fantastic match. Even if you had a bias towards one team or the other. The pace it was played at was outstanding. It was full of chances. It had some really, really great pressing from Leeds. They were really, really great. It was like watching old Bielsa ball for a time, just without all of the man-to-man marking.
Chris Armas coming back to Old Trafford as well.
Yep. The old... Which coach was he? Was he...
Ranić, assistant.
Oh, was he assistant for Ranić?
Yep. Obviously, we've got the Manchester City financial allegations.
Yes, well, I mean, it's been quite a couple of weeks. We haven't really had time to talk about it over the last couple of episodes, but there's been a lot going on behind the scenes in the Premier League. So, a couple of weeks ago, I was going to bring up as a feature that the government were about to release the football white paper, which is going to look at the governance of football clubs. And in fact, I still have an article up written by The Sun, who leaked the charter before it was due to be announced. And they put this article out, and they summarized it in one of their graphics, which I'm just trying to reload at the moment because I do still have the tab open from then. But essentially, all clubs would need a license from a regulator, and to get that license, teams would need to meet certain criteria. And this is to prevent various different situations happening. So they need financial security, and that's to prevent a situation like Derby or a situation like Bury, where the club goes into administration or liquidation because they don't have enough assets. Then they would need to have fit and proper owners. And I'm just taking these headings as they're printed on the Sun graphic. These are not the actual... this isn't the terminology of what it would say, but fit and proper owners. Of course, this is in relation to things like the Glazer takeover of Manchester United, where it was run through debt leverage, and then the debt was all leveraged onto the club. Then it would be a fan power issue, and this would be, it's summarised here as clubs must keep a minimum standard of fan engagement in key decisions around its cultural heritage. So it's not necessarily a 50+1 model like the Bundesliga is, but it is codifying the fact that clubs must act within the cultural interests of the supporters and the community, which, you know, is a difference, you know. And we're seeing rumours started breaking yesterday that Qatar are looking to put a bid in for Manchester United. And one of the rumoured talking points that's going out is that they want to put in a massive cultural investment for the land around Old Trafford. It'll be things like that, putting your feelings on Qatar aside. That's the kind of thing they're looking for in these new regulator tests. And finally, it's approved leagues and cups. And of course, this is to deal with the European Super League, which again, yesterday announced its new plans to try and break away from everyone. But this time, I think they've only got Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juventus along for the ride. Juventus, of course, being an interesting one because they are currently under financial investigations for potential breach of contracts. So all of this was due to be announced this week. And then it wasn't, because instead it got delayed. And some people believe, and I couldn't speak to this, that it's been delayed because the Premier League have charged Man City with alleged breaches of financial rules.
On 100 separate occasions.
On 100, I think it's 101 actually.
101.
The Sky Sports article I've got up says around 100 times. The number I've seen is 101. I'm not certain about that though. But yes, this is, there's speculation that what's going on here is the Premier League is clamping down on City to try and get ahead of this white paper to say, look, we are doing our jobs here. We don't need this independent regulator to come in, because it's fairly widely thought around the league that an independent regulator coming in would take power away from the Premier League. It would also force them to diverge more of their funds into lower league football down the football pyramid.
And that's obviously, sorry to interrupt you, I wasn't around in 1992. Mm. But that's what the Premier League wanted to avoid by breaking away from the FA, right?
Yeah, this is exactly sort of why the Premier League was set up in the first place, was to try and break out of that football league setup. I think it's the sorry, there's just a bit of static. I think that's your phone. Usually, if it goes static before, it usually seems to be my phone. But no, so this is all set up with, you know, with profits in mind. And of course, the Premier League becoming such a huge, and I mean enormous, financial juggernaut, there are questions abound about its duty of care to the game at its grassroots and at its lower league level. And that is one of the things that this government white paper was due to take on. So it's possible, and I don't want to speculate because I do not have all of the facts, and frankly, we will be waiting years for the resolution of this City case. So I've seen it speculated yesterday or today that it's going to take about 4 years before we find out whether any of these charges stick.
And I believe they have a team of world-class lawyers.
Yes, they have.
Hang on.
So many lawyers. I think they've got a lawyer who's on, what's he on? He's on a very
400 grand a week.
Yeah, he's on an extremely lucrative contract. He's essentially, I think, he's the top lawyer in the UK.
Yeah.
Not 80, by 80, title,
pounds
but
a day.
Yeah, it's a staggering amount of money. But yeah, that's how seriously they're taking this case, because of course, if they are found guilty on any of these charges, that could lead to all sorts of things. It could lead to fines. And there are people saying, what's the point of fines? But if they get fined for all 100 of these charges, that will be quite a weighty fine, even for Manchester City, I would wager. More worryingly,
yeah, sorry,
for them.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time. Legal cases take a long time to get that resolved in any realm, not football.
Mm.
And ultimately, I think it's just be something that's going around in the background. Obviously, people will point to the Juventus case.
Mm.
But that's slightly different because Juventus are listed on a stock exchange. They're listed as a company, a public company, and therefore, without going too much into those laws, legally they have to show their books.
Mm. And that's really what the issue with the Juventus case was that it was contractual on the players' side of things. Because this is contractual on the sponsors' side of things for City. Because the speculation is, and this is speculation that's been running around on social media for a while, is that they've been using shell companies, i.e. companies that don't actually have any assets and only really exist on paper, to try and route money from the people who own the club into the club through means that wouldn't get tested through financial fair play or through the league's financial regulations.
Well, the saving grace of Man City fans here is that at least they're not as stringent as La Liga.
Yes, although La Liga has itself been accused of favouritism towards its top two clubs.
I'd say this as someone who really admires Real Madrid, La Liga have been a bit harsh on Barcelona. But then again, Real Madrid and Barcelona are the two clubs who are trying to compete with...
Well, of course, with Barcelona, there's been that whole saga with registering Gavi for La Liga.
Yeah, which they've managed to do. So.
Which they have managed to do, and fair play to them for managing to get around that. In fact, Bartomeu?
The old president.
Was talking about Barcelona's financial situation, because, of course, the running joke over the summer was all of these different levers that Barcelona were pulling.
I think it might have been Juan Laporta.
Laporta, yes.
Bartomeu was the disgraced old president.
Yes, no, that's correct. Laporta was talking about all these financial levers that Barcelona had, because they were in a really bad place financially. Wages absolutely off the charts. Seven players over 400k or so, I think it was. I think we looked at Transfermarkt for that.
We looked at Capology, actually.
Oh, is it Capology?
Yeah. I mean, if we look at the salaries once again, there you go. You got Frankie Busquets, Jordi Alba, Lewandowski, all over £400,000, €1,000 a week.
But they managed to offload a few players who were earning significant money. And their talks with Frankie de Jong, for example, are still ongoing as to whether he will take a cut wage deal. But they have managed to, I think, actually turn a profit in this last quarter.
Yeah.
And turning a profit for a football club is actually quite unusual. And part of that's due to the way that they write up their earnings and their losses. They will try and divert as much of their earnings into losses to avoid paying tax. And then they'll try and sort of deal with some of those losses in ways that it is acceptable for financial fair play and financial regulations. It's honestly, football ownership and football financing is fascinating to me, because it is so, so complex, and you've got so many different things to be worrying about all the time. But when you mess it up, you end up in a situation like Man City are in at the moment, where they could face fines. More worryingly for them, though, getting back to that original point, they could face loss of points in this season. They could face expulsion from Europe, like they nearly did over financial fair play, which only got turned around at the very last moment. Actually, because there's another thing that comes after this, they could face relegation or expulsion, and they could have their titles that they won stripped away from them during the period those allegations happened. And I believe that would cover the first three of their Premier League wins.
At least. So that would be 11-12, 13-14, where the Gerrard slip happened.
Mm. 17-18. And I think that would be the three that got stripped from them if they were to go down the title stripping route.
Yeah, so that would be United getting two and Liverpool getting one.
Yes, it would. So... obviously, there's potential for serious implications here. I think, actually, expulsion would be the big one. Because if you expel City, what do you do at that point? I assume you'd then just create an extra promotion space in each of the leagues, or take away a relegation space in each of the leagues?
I'd say this is what would happen. I mean, so when Juventus got relegated to a Calciopoli, there wasn't any extra space, etc. They just had to fight it out.
Yeah.
And obviously, they had a mass exodus of players.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking in terms of if, for example, let's say that City got relegated down to League Two. Pity on those League Two players, first of all.
But how many of the City players would leave, though? Think about it.
Very fair, but you'd also have a lot of academy prospects would be looking at that and absolutely licking their lips, because they have then got a chance to make themselves heroes for that City team and play in a league where they are still above that standard.
I don't think they get relegated all the way to League
No,
two.
I don't think they would. But let's say that they did. In that case, I assume you would then promote an extra team from the Championship and then promote an extra team from League One and then promote an extra team from League Two.
Yes.
So, you know, when this does come about, actually, there will be quite an interesting opportunity. If some kind of relegation or expulsion does happen, there will be added opportunities for teams to try and get up that year, especially because then you avoid a year of playing City in your league.
True. And obviously with the mass exodus of players, I would say that it would be pretty... I mean, loads of clubs would benefit, for sure.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this, and I've seen reports that Haaland wants to leave in the summer, etc. Which reminds me of Zlatan at Barcelona more and more. If I'm Man United and see Erling Haaland on the market, you surely go for it.
Oh, you have to, you know. And the talk,
even though it's Man City, but it would be the...
Well, it would be rather a middle finger to City, obviously.
But then again, that would just be revenge for Tevez, right?
So. Yes, it would. Not that we're bitter about that or anything. But actually, putting that to one side, Haaland is a very good player for a Manchester United system.
Exactly.
He's really good. I still think he would have been better there.
There's an in-cup play needs work, which I do think where Osimhen is actually better than him.
But he has got... He's got the physicality. He's not got the injury record. He's...
He has been injured for quite a few games this season.
Well, this season...
And last season he was hamstrung by injury.
That's fair enough. I mean, I suppose anyone looks good on an injury record compared to Anthony Martial.
Yeah, that's true as well.
Watching that Leeds game and watching how well Rashford and Sancho linked up when Sancho came on and thinking, imagine if Martial was there as well.
Yeah.
That'd be so nice. But, you know, putting that to one side for a moment, no. There's been rumours for a little while that Haaland is only going to stay at City for a little bit anyway.
Yeah, I mean...
It feels like that might be what he does from this point, just go and try himself out in new leagues and just sort of keep
a couple years
flitting around.
Yeah,
two or three years. Almost like a...
Like Zlatan.
Yeah, Zlatan-esque, yeah. And just sort of go and win a few titles in the Premier League and then go, okay, well, I've done that. Let's go to Serie A now and win a few titles with, I don't know, Inter or someone.
Yeah, Inter can't afford them, actually. I don't think any team in Italy can actually afford it. I'll be dead honest. No team in Italy can afford it.
No, I mean, they probably no, could. No someone Italy. Would try and wriggle their finances.
No chance. Genuinely, I don't think a team in Italy can afford it. I'll be dead honest. Could go to PSG, could go to Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich.
No, I think someone would try and just...
Maybe when he's like 35, he will go to Serie A.
Yeah, maybe. At that point, because that'll be about 12, 13 years from now. So at that point, we might have a resurgence in, I'm thinking particularly in US football. They'll have had the World Cup by that point. The US League is getting stronger. I don't think they'll be at a top five European league level, but I do think they'll be a better league at that point.
Interesting. No, I completely agree. But then again, I also have suggested Ilkay Gundogan from Man United on a free, which I think is a very sensible signing.
Yeah, I mean, free transfers, you can't be too picky with them, really. Free transfers are a great thing.
But playing Gundogan, playing the Eriksen role, he's been relatively injury-free in his career.
Actually, this is something I wanted to bring up with you. Because, of course, Marcel Sabitzer has been drafted into a place Eriksen. How do you think he played in the substitutes appearance and in the full
played pretty well. I think he's got the makings of someone who's better next to someone like Casemiro.
Obviously, really well. Not having Casemiro really hurt United in that midweek match against Leeds.
I mean, not even having Scott McTominay hurt Man United, to be honest. Because I think McTominay always turns into a different kind of beast than playing against Leeds.
He has got that rivalry embedded in him. He always brings it out when he plays Leeds. And to be completely honest, Fred had an appalling game. He had a really, and you know, I feel sorry for him because he is a good player, and he's done really, really well in his appearances off the bench. But he had a really, really poor game, and it hurt United.
But that's what you get from Fred. It's inconsistency. So ultimately, we recognise that he's a United fan in his whole time here. He's been here almost 5 years. So
I've just had an email. In fact, we've both just had an email from Mr. Jennings, the other regular co-host, who was hoping to be here but has been asked to cover some bits for first and second lesson today. So he's arranging that. But he will be back after the break, he tells us.
We looked forward to having him back. let's move on to the prediction side before we analyse our club for the week. Have you got the Premier League ones up? And actually, do you want to tell the listeners how I performed this week?
Yes, I will do, as I finish writing out some of the results, the fixtures coming up for this week. But this is going back to the predictions from last Friday, which, of course, is not the last show we recorded, but yeah. Time is funny here. So, last week's predictions, we both outperformed Edge. Edge got 4 results correct, and it was a week where there were a few draws knocking about, which I think always hurts Edge, because Edge can only ever predict a winner.
Yeah.
But we both got 5 correct results. You got 1 correct score in the Tottenham-Man City match, but I got 2.
What was your second correct score?
I didn't get the correct score in Tottenham, actually. I got correct scores for Newcastle, West Ham, and for Forest Leeds, which I predicted 1-1 and 1-0, respectively.
Let's get on to this week's predictions.
Yes, let's.
So West Ham-Chelsea. Edge have Chelsea favoured to win. Mr. Ferguson, just a quick 5 prediction as usual.
Yeah, I'll agree with them, and I don't think it'll be comprehensive, but I think it'll be a scrappy 1-0.
I'm going to go for 2-1 Chelsea.
Okay.
Tottenham-Leicester, Tottenham favourite to win. 2-1 Tottenham.
2-1 Tottenham, okay. And there's always the potential for a Spursy moment, but I think Leicester aren't in a great place at the moment. I think it'll be 3-0 Tottenham.
Southampton Wolves.
I'm back in my hometown, boys. I'm going for a Wolves win here, and I'm going 2-1.
I'll go 1-0 Wolves, and Edge also backs Wolves. Now we've got a derby of some sort. Palace Brighton. Brighton a favourite to win by Edge. I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, Palace will be in a reasonably good place, but Brighton are a fantastic team. I would back them over most teams in the league at the moment. I'm going to take them 3-1.
Brentford, Arsenal favourite to win. I think this could be... I'm going to go 1-0 to the Arsenal.
Okay.
For you older listeners there, you're probably very familiar with that.
Oh, yes. But not as familiar as 1-0 down, 2-1 up.
Yeah.
I've triggered a whole set of Arsenal fans with that, I think. But I think this could be a bit of a trouncing, actually. Yeah. Arsenal in good form. I'm going to pick a bold 4-0.
They did lose to Everton, though.
True. Yes, that's true.
Fulham Forest. Fulham favoured to win. I'll go 1-0 Fulham.
I'm going the other way. I'm going for Forest here. Wow. I think they're starting to get somewhere with this team now. I'm going to take them 2-0.
Bournemouth, Newcastle. Newcastle failed to win.
Yeah.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yeah, and for good reason. 3-0 Newcastle.
I'll go 2-0 Newcastle. Moving on to our games on Sunday. Leeds against Manchester United. Man United favoured to win. I'll go 3-2 United.
3-2 United. Yeah, I mean, what to make of this game now?
Yeah.
It's so strange that we have these two teams playing each other in the league consecutively.
Yeah.
It's very unusual, this situation, which makes predicting it really hard. But I think Ten Hag's tactics will make the difference here. I think they'll both try and adjust from the midweek fixture. I do think United will adjust better, and I'm going to take them 3-1.
City Villa. City favourite to beat Aston Villa. I'm going to go 2-1 City.
2-1 City. I'm going the other way. Not that I particularly fancy Villa, but I do think City are in a rut. And there's always the potential they break out of it. But I also noticed that I don't have a draw predicted yet, so I need to predict a draw somewhere or I'll feel very silly. So I'm going to take a 1-1.
And then on Monday Night Football, the Merseyside Derby, Liverpool favoured to win, I'm going 1-0 Everton.
Yeah, and I do not blame you for that, because I'm also going for an Everton win. This doesn't feel like a Liverpool team that's in a place to fight a Merseyside Derby. Everton are in a good place at the moment with that win over Arsenal. What a difference that will make. New manager bounce, we've seen how it has its effects. I think there's going to be goals in this one, though. I'm going to take 3-2 Everton.
Moving on to Liga, Monaco PSG tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I'm going to edge PSG to take this. I believe they drew in the league.
If Edge ever doesn't predict PSG, I'll be quite surprised. It's in Ligue 1, certainly.
So I'm pretty sure they drew this season. Yeah, they drew 1-1 in August.
It's the two highest scoring teams.
It's Clermont d'Herbin, actually. Not sure. Very dodgy ref. I'm sure some of the listeners can make out a name, a nickname for him. I'll go 2-1 PSG. Messi's injured. Mbappe's injured.
And there was something from an old PSG player or member of backroom staff or something that came out, I think this week, talking about how Messi had no interest in PSG. He was very, very critical about it, saying how Messi only have cared about Barcelona and Argentina and didn't care about PSG at all. Not that I particularly blame him, to be honest.
I haven't seen it.
No, I can't remember who said it, but it's something I've seen this week. Two highest scoring teams in the league, though. I think there's going to be goals in this one. 4-3 PSG.
Wow. We've got Milan-Torino moving to Serie A. Milan favoured to win. They're in a bit of a rut. I'm gonna go for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw.
I was going to back Torino, but then I was like, it's a bit. Edge favours Milan as well.
Yeah, I see your point. And actually, there's a reasonable chance that they do try and rest some players to be strong for the Champions League starting midweek. But I think they're also in a rut. They want to come out of it strongly. So I think they are going to try and play good football here. And I think they're going to win it 2-0.
Moving on to the second game we're going to predict. Lazio-Atalanta. Lazio favoured to win. Atalanta having lost to Sassuolo in their last game.
A battle of fourth and fifth in Serie A, this one.
They beat Salernitana 8-2, drew 3-3 against Juventus. You know what? Lazio are a decent team, but I'm going to go 2-0 Atalanta. 2-1
Atalanta. 2-1 Atalanta.
Are you going to go with Edge and back Lazio?
No, actually. I'm going to go for a draw, I think. I think they'll actually somewhat cancel each other out. Atalanta have been leakier, certainly. They've conceded 7 more goals in the league so far. But I think because they are trying not to lose ground on Lazio, who are a point ahead of them in the table, I think they are going to really fight this one out. So I'm going to go 4. Just looking at goals quickly, they're both high scoring teams. I'm going to go for a 2-2.
Moving on to the Bundesliga, we've got Leipzig Union Berlin tomorrow at 5:30. Leipzig favoured to beat Union Berlin, but I don't think it's going to happen. I'm going to go 2-1 Leipzig.
2-1 Leipzig. And you said Leipzig are favoured?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting one this. Leipzig on a longer unbeaten run, Berlin on a longer winning run.
Yeah.
Two teams who've performed very well this season, Union Berlin especially. Leipzig, of course, backed by Red Bull, they've been doing fairly well in recent seasons. I think if anything trips them up, it'll be their involvement in Champions League football midweek, because they've got City to play. Yeah. They play City week after, don't they? Yeah. So actually, no, they will... Oh, that's changed my thinking then. I thought they were going to try and rest players for this match, but no, I don't think they will. I'm going to take them 3-1 then.
Moving on to the Club World Cup final. We've got Real Madrid versus Al Hilal. Al Hilal obviously beat Flamengo 3-2 in a dramatic victory. Real Madrid beating Al Ahly comfortably. I'm going to go 3-1 Real Madrid.
I'm assuming that Edge has Madrid.
This is not an Edge prediction.
Oh, is it not? Okay, well,
Edge would still put it Real Madrid.
If Edge didn't predict Madrid, I'd be shocked.
I would be
but,
too.
Having said that, I'm predicting an Al Hilal win. I'm actually doing it. Here's the thing. The Club World Cup is so strange. It's so, so strange. I can't tell you how many times I've watched Manchester United in the Club World Cup and they come up against a team that do not play a style that they recognise. And it completely throws them off. And it's probably somewhere they've had to travel a very long distance to get to. It's in the middle
Morocco,
of
Morocco, it's not that far away from Spain, though.
No, that's fair enough. But it will be in the middle of a long run of fixtures. They'll have other priorities on the list. I'm just checking if they're playing...
They are playing Elche on the 15th, so in 5 days' time.
I think... is that Madrid?
Yeah, Real Madrid.
So their Liverpool match must therefore be the week after then.
Yeah.
I'm still not certain they'll want to really commit that much to this, I don't think. A trophy is a trophy, but the Club World Cup doesn't have the best prestige, I don't think. So, with all of that said, Al Hilal will be so motivated for this, especially because Ronaldo has gone to Al Nassr and they will want to stick one up to them because they are the two big clubs.
And obviously Al Nassr, Ronaldo popped forward.
Yes.
Yesterday.
They will want to take the headlines back. I think Al Hilal are going to scrape this 1-0.
I look forward to reviewing this when we're back and it says correct result.
If Al Hilal win this 1-0, I'm taking this audio clip and I'm just going to play it back to you.
Moving on to La Liga, we have Villarreal Barcelona on Sunday evening. Barcelona failed to win. It's at La Ceramica.
I missed that fixture completely. Sorry, what was
Villarreal
that?
Barcelona.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised that they've got Barca to win because Barcelona are in terrific form.
Yeah. I'm going to go 3-0 Barcelona.
Is this a Saturday fixture or Sunday?
Sunday night.
Sunday night. But they are at home for the Europa League first leg, so they don't need to worry about travel.
It's within Spain. It's not far in any case.
Yeah.
I'm going, as I said, 3-0 Barcelona.
Yeah, I was trying to reason myself into not picking them, but I do have to pick them. I think this will be 2-0, though.
Moving on to the famous Sporting Porto fixture. It's at the Alvalad. Porto are favoured to win. I'm going to go 1-0. I'm going to go 2-0 Porto.
Yeah.
Even though they don't have any fit central midfielders.
Yeah, Porto are in a better position than Sporting. They've got a slightly longer winning run. They've scored more goals. They've conceded fewer goals. They are 7 points clear of Sporting. Anyway, they're still behind Benfica, obviously. But it's a derby. Anything can happen in a derby. And I'm going to take Sporting to use the backing of the home crowd and squeak a 2-1 win. And just to check, what did you have for that one?
I went 2-0 Porto.
You went 2-0 Porto. And Edge, I assume, had Porto?
Yes.
Yes, it did.
Today's club, per Mr. Ferguson's suggestion, we are looking at is AFC Ajax.
Yeah, Ajax are in a strange place at the moment. Because obviously they lost...
Sacked their manager.
Yeah, they sacked their manager. They've lost some players recently. They are still to the... one of the dominant forces in the Eredivisie.
Yep.
But they are a long way off, it feels like, where they were even just two or three seasons ago when we were watching them, you know, get within 2 minutes of a Champions League final.
Yep, under Erik ten Hag.
I mean, the first thing I notice immediately is this massive discrepancy.
Disparity?
I think I was looking for disparity. I got confused between the two. But in ages across the squad, because I'm looking at Transfermarkt at the moment, and I'm seeing...
You're probably looking at the goalkeepers being like, what?
Well, yeah, the goalkeepers are the first thing you see, obviously, who are 30 for Jeronimo Rulli, 39 for Pasveer, and 40 for Martin Stecklenburg. But then you look elsewhere, and... I would say there's only really three players in there who are of the age where you want them to be, where they are sort of mentoring the younger players.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a lot of their squad is 23 and 24 and under. Because, yeah, you've got, I'd say Pasveer and Stekelenburg, yes, they've got experience. I would say they're actually too old at this point. And I think they will be moving very soon.
Yeah, there's probably a reason why they've got Hieronymo really coming in January. Yeah. So.
But then other than that, you've got Florian Grillitsch, who is injured at the moment, but he's 27. You've got Steven Berghuis, who is...
former Watford player.
He's 31. And you've got Dusan Tadic, who is 34. And that's it, really. Everyone else is 25 and under. Davy Klaassen as well, who's 29.
Yeah.
I would not say that's enough experience in the squad. And I love building my squads young.
Ajax have a notoriously young team.
They do.
I would say, I mean, if I'm being dead honest, they obviously did sign Lorenzo Luca from Pisa, who's actually he's over 2 meters tall. I don't think he's been playing many games this season. Nope. He has not played in the Eredivisie. Why am I looking at Champions League? Eredivisie. He's got 2 goals and 1 assist. He's played 108 minutes. Obviously, Brian Brobby is their starting striker. Again, for some reason, it shows me Champions League, but he's got 10 goals this season.
Yeah, Brian Brobby is a good player. In fact, that's the thing. A lot of these players in the Ajax squad are good players, but it's not quite gelling as it used to.
I'd say I'd agree, but at the same time, I'm just interested to see what youth prospects come through. So that's why I've looked at young Ajax. They've got left back Yuri Bas coming through. They've got a lone player from Ecuador, Patrickson Delgado, central midfielder. I'll be dead honest, we don't know much about this Ajax team. And I would probably say, first of all, they should look to the youth setup.
Mm. Especially with their setup that they've always had in the youth team. They are very good at bringing through youth prospects.
For some odd reason, they've gone to establishing more practices where they get ready-made players, such as Jorge Sanchez, Nora Marulli, although you do want an experienced goalkeeper. I'd say this. I think Francisco Conceição will get more minutes next season. You're looking at Kudus, could probably go 50 to 60. You're looking at Kenneth Taylor, who could get sold. Edson Alvarez would probably leave. So there's a lot of money there they could reinvest very smartly. And I'm going to actually check. I'm going to go to the Eredivisie League. They've got Owen Vindal, who came in to replace Tagliafico, I believe, who left. Me trying to, just show my knowledge. Transfer and rumours. Transfer top leagues. Let's see this. Oh, I've not been able to do that. I just want to see the Eredivisie. Please, transfer marked. Most clicked. Let's go. Eredivisie.
Tech troubles on Ojogo Benito.
Eredivisie. Let's do that. Nope. That's not what I wanted. Competition. There we go. Now let's sort this by market values.
Transfer marked is an incredible site. It sometimes feels like it has too much information because it can be a little bit more fiddly than you'd hope trying to get to certain pages.
Just one values. Okay. So let's just look at some of the other teams. Alkmaar, Twente.
This is interesting. I've just suddenly looked at the top of the Ajax page on Transfermarkt and seen their average age is 25. Obviously that will be massively skewed by Pasveer and Stekelenburg at 39 and 40 respectively.
Yeah.
But all the same, you know, that's once you take those two out, that's going to be a very young average age. And, you know, of course, Ajax is a famously young squad, but I do think that's too much. Interestingly, though, they do have a 43.5% foreigners rate, which I think is much higher than it used to be for Ajax. I think they've always been quite good at bringing through homegrown players as well.
To be honest, I'd be looking at young players around Europe, and in Brazil, for example. Take Vitor Roque from Atlético Paranaense. obviously they have Ryan Brobbey, just another striking option, for example.
Well, of course.
I'd be looking in those kind of leagues for Ajax.
Yeah, I mean, Lorenzo Luca's only on loan until the summer.
Yeah.
So they will need another striker because they don't really have another recognised striker after that.
Yep.
They've got, obviously they've got wingers who can play up front like Bergwijn and Tadic, but no, Robbie is the only striker.
Exactly. And maybe a left-sided centre-back replacement for Calvin Bassey if he moves to left-back because he hasn't exactly succeeded in that left centre-back role. So I think another season would do him well. To be honest, it would just be raising funds for Ajax. I think Timber would go for about 50. Taylor, you could get a good 30. I'd like Kenneth Taylor a lot as a player.
Do you think Timber's going to go this summer?
I believe he will.
Yeah. Because obviously there was trepidation about Chelsea. letting both him and Martinez go at the same time.
Yes.
But I think that now that it's a second summer, and especially when they get a new coach in who will probably want to change things about how they play and how the club is run, I think it's very realistic that Timber will go because he's one of their best money-raising options. I think he probably is their best money-raising option. Him and Edson Alvarez.
Yep, and Kudus. I don't have much more to comment on this one, to be honest. Because I just don't know the budget. Don't know the league as much. They do have a player called Mohamed Darami, who is on loan at Copenhagen. Again, a very tricky forward. He could fill in that Lorenzo Luca replacement. They have signed Kaplan, a Turkish centre back.
Although he's got a torn knee ligament at the moment.
Ah.
they've been struck by injuries actually, which I think has left their squad quite thin because they're down to two recognised centre backs in Timber and Bassey. They're down to one recognised left back in Owen Vindal because Yuri Bas is injured with a ruptured syndesmotic ligament. That doesn't sound good. And they're down to one defensive midfielder in Edson Alvarez because Florian Grilic is out with a knock. Return unknown. It just says knock. I was hoping you'd say something slightly more than that, but oh well.
But they do have Taylor and Berghaus.
They do, yeah, so. But they are more... they aren't the same defensive midfielder mould, I would say.
In terms of Ajax, I would look to get some more creativity there to help Tadic out. I'd look to get a 9.
It's almost more important, I think, for Ajax to actually get the coaching set up right.
Oh, yes, 100%.
Because they are good at getting good young players in, and it's just about making them develop. We've seen with Ten Hag at United what he's done to a squad of players who are admittedly very good players, but who had lost their way. You know? But we've also seen what he's done for the likes of Pelistri, and even to an extent the likes of Anthony Elanga. If he can... He was doing that to a squad with regularity back at Ajax. I think they need to try and find someone who is going to be that good in the youth development sector. I think that's how they get back to where they were a few seasons ago.
Here's a shout. If Graham Potter gets sacked by Chelsea, Ajax?
I think that would be a very shrewd bit of business. It's not too difficult, I don't feel, for an English-speaking manager to move to the Netherlands.
Given the similarities between the language.
Yeah, and given that there is a lot of English speaking going on there anyway, I went there in the summer of 2012, it would have been, with an organisation, and we got on absolutely fine, speaking no Dutch whatsoever. In fact, I remember distinctly trying to speak, I didn't know Dutch, but I tried to speak some French and some German there. Because I thought it was more culturally appropriate. And they just looked at me and started speaking English. And they were fine. So I don't think there'll be an issue with someone moving there. Obviously, you know, you'd want to learn the language to ingratiate yourself a little bit more. But I think it does make the move easier. And I think it makes the settling easier. And I think it means you then have a better start with a new club there.
An outside shout, René Maric, founder of Spielverlagen, the famous football website, was Jesse Marsh's assistant at Leeds and was Marco Rose's assistant at Dortmund as well. So he's very well versed in the Red Bull group. Just a few thoughts. It's a wrap, guys. Thank you very much to our listeners for listening to this episode, and take care, and we'll see you on the next one.